This meeting of the Senate Finance Committee will come back to order. And I've heard from several members of the committee that they forgot some of the things that were presented earlier, and they wondered if Mr. Albrecht would re-present the spreadsheet. Okay, we don't have to do that again. Senator Wicklund, you have a couple of amendments, and I believe Ms. Stengel is going to go through real quick overview of the A57 author's amendment.
Yes, that's
welcome to
correct,
the committee. If you want to just go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Lexi Stengel, Senate Counsel. I'll be giving a high-level overview of the A57 amendment. As you can see, it's 140 pages, so I'll be brief. And if there are any specific questions about anything in the amendment, there are a whole team of us here to answer any of questions you have. So the A57 includes a lot of non-substantive changes, including technical assistance provided by the agencies, technical corrections, conforming changes, and grammatical changes from the reviser, staff, and from Senate Counsel.
Ms. Stengel, can you move a little closer to the microphone?
Yes, too? Sorry. It includes non-substantive revisions for clarity and readability. It moves sections from one article to another and moves sections within the same article and eliminates several sections that were duplicated in multiple articles by consolidating them. There are also some substantive changes in this amendment. Provisions of the bill were heard both by the State Gov Committee and the Judiciary Committees after the last engrossment, so those amendments made by those committees are included in the A57 in their entirety. There are provisions in the bill related to submerged closed-loop heat exchanger systems, and work has been continuing on that, and there is new language in the amendment to replace the language that was in the bill as it's before the committee. It corrects fee amounts to reflect the intent for various health licensing boards. It is moving the guardian and conservator background checks to the BCA to comply with federal law. It allows DHS to obtain fingerprint-based background studies from the BCA rather than creating a new statutory chapter for public law background studies. It includes the Senate, the language from Senate File 1164, which is Senator Champion's bill, to incorporate recommendations from the Background Studies Task Force. It allows certified community behavioral health clinics to return to the Section 223 demonstration project. It adds additional evaluation metrics to the cultural and ethnic minority infrastructure grant program that was recommended by DHS. It adds where pilot sites must be located for the Mobile Crisis and Stabilization Services pilot project. It excludes the State Employee Group Insurance Program, or CGIP, from certain drug formulary disclosures and modification requirements included in Senate File 328, based on recommendations from CGIP. It modifies the definition of transaction as it relates to certain healthcare entity transactions to reflect the amendment adopted in the Judiciary Committee and additional modifications to ensure the intent of the Judiciary Amendment is fully completed as envisioned. And it deletes and reinstates Article 19, which is the appropriations article, to update the numbers and rider language to conform with the spreadsheet.
Questions from the committee? A long, largely technical amendment, but as you point out, some things had passed at various points in other committees that you... I noticed the underground water heat exchange is looked like it was two different provisions in here. Is that that's just all what was agreed upon? It just shows up in different places in here.
Mr. Chair, I can't speak to whether there's an agreement, but yes, there was one section, several definitions in one section in the bill, and the substantive section was deleted and inserted with this new language that allows some ongoing statutory language as well as some uncoded language that allows the department to do some additional research and tracking in the first couple of years.
Okay. And Mr. Chair? And,
yes, Senator Wicklund.
Just a comment on that is that when we had the hearing a few weeks ago, it was indicated that there was work still going on with the department, and that work is still continuing to go on. But this language is revised and updated to reflect some of the agreement that's been reached. But that doesn't mean that there won't be more. So,
some of these things are still works in progress.
Yes, that's correct.
If there's no further discussion on it, Senator Wicklund moves that. Oh, Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if Mr. Albrecht could confirm that there's no fiscal impacts to any of these changes? Or Mr. Nauman?
There is an appropriations article
at the back. And is part of answering Sir Pratt's question, the spreadsheet walkthrough was assuming these changes?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, yes, that's correct. The amendment makes the bill, the underlying bill match the spreadsheet.
Is there further discussion? Senator Pratt.
Mr. Chair, when I was online, I was looking at a spreadsheet that was dated April 4th, and now I see the one dated April 16th, so that makes sense.
Okay. If there's no further discussion, Senator Wicklund moves the A57 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Wicklund, smaller amendments.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A58 amendment. And
I believe that one is... Is it in packets or no?
It's being, I think you have to pass that out.
It was in my...
Mr. Chair, I can...
It was in my packet, but I...
Maybe it is in the packets.
Okay, it is in the packets.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Senator Wicklund, go ahead on the A58.
Mr. Chair, the A58 amendment is... the result of our finding an error that we hadn't adjusted. It includes the technical assistance from DHS regarding the rate increase for behavioral health payment rates. DHS analysis concluded that an 8% rate increase was as high as the rate increase could go without violating the upper payment limit. Violation of the upper payment rate would mean that the state has to pay the difference with state-only funds. The amendment contains language the language states that only funds if a violation occurs. And so the spreadsheet is currently including the rate increase of an 8% increase. The original bill language, when we heard it, that was a 35% increase. So that's why you see the delete 35 and insert 8. And then that other, other language is to address the technical assistance from DHS.
Is there a discussion from the committee? If not, Senator Wicklund moves the A58 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Should we, before we get to other amendments and so on, should we have the commissioners, welcome the commissioners up here to speak, or do you want to have something else? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Stengel was going to comment on a couple other documents that you have available.
Please.
For you to use as you go through the bill. Or you talk about them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. In lieu of an article by article, section by section walkthrough, we thought it might be helpful just to point out a few documents in the packets that will help you find what you need. And we're, of course, available here to answer questions if you have any. There's a Senate Council summary in your packet that's nearly 50 pages long that provides a section by section walkthrough of what everything else does, but perhaps some more helpful. Document is titled Health and Human Services Omnibus Budget Bill Index, and it has a table that looks like this. This lists everything sort of thematically, so if you're looking for a particular initiative, you can find it easier in this document, and then it will tell you which article and sections to look at for the relevant language.
Good. I think this is a smarter way to go through it than trying to have people search on their own to find things. Any other points, or should we hear from the commissioners now?
Oh, it sounds good to hear from the commissioners. Thank you.
Commissioners, Commissioner Harpstead's getting up first. So welcome to the committee. Thank you for being here. And we would love to hear from you, your comments or suggestions or concerns or whatever about the bill. Welcome to the committee, and please go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Marty, members. I'm Jody Harpstead, Commissioner of the Department of Human Services. We are very grateful for the budget items of this committee, focused on strengthening and supporting Minnesota's families and children, and deeply grateful to the Governor's Office and legislative leadership for deciding to invest so much in this space. Historic investments in child care, let's get this done this year. CCAP to the 75th percentile, reprioritizing the basic sliding fee scale, supporting the child care industry to support the other sectors of the economy. Administrative improvements for child care providers, once again, the workforce that allows thousands and thousands of Minnesotans to offer their talents in an historic workforce shortage. So many other great supports for families to make Minnesota the best place for all children to grow up. Funding to support Families First Prevention Services Act, Phase 3. Support for child protection, though we are hoping to see more for Indian children here before we're done. MFIP six-month budgeting and other important reforms. Funding for people experiencing homelessness to instead experience housing justice. And food security for Minnesota families. Again, supports that allow thousands and thousands of Minnesotans to contribute to our economy in an historic workforce shortage. And the crown jewel, support to developing the creation of a Department of Children, Youth, and Families to combine the efforts of so many state agencies in a focus on our families, our children, and our youth. Support for DHS's fraud department to steadily monitor for fraud, abuse, and error, which I believe has kept DHS-funded organizations from perpetrating the fraud we saw last year in Feeding Our Future. We will want to keep talking about IT investments to support children and family services because you can't split what you don't have. And while I've always been proud of Minnesota's investment in its people to help people to live full lives in community, I've been embarrassed to discover in a trip to Washington last week a confirmation that we are one of three states that is unable to allow people to re-enroll in Medicaid online because we have so not invested in our IT infrastructure over the years. Would also like to keep talking about licensing resources and our continuous improvement and compliance proposal. But again, thank you so much for your compassion for and commitment to strong families and giving every Minnesota child and youth the opportunity to thrive, to grow up strong, and to contribute their talents to our communities and our economy.
Thank you, Commissioner. Dr. Commissioner Cunningham.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Chair Marty and members of the committee, for the record, I am Brooke Cunningham, Commissioner of Health. I haven't had the opportunity to meet with all of you yet, but I hope to do that in the future. At MDH, we seek to be your partners in protecting and improving the health of all Minnesotans. I greatly appreciate the efforts of Senator Wicklund and members of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee to include essential investments for public health in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. As Senator Wicklund said this morning, this is truly a transformational bill for public health. I will take a few moments today to highlight MDH's priorities included in the bill. As you know, public health historically has been underfunded and ends up in a cycle of panic and neglect. The bill includes new investments for local and tribal public health around the state, as well as new investments to maintain a strong foundation for emergency response. As the last few years have taught us, public health has never been more critical, and you can't wait for a pandemic or another emergency to make investments. We appreciate the legislature's investments to create a public health system that works for everyone, everywhere. At MDH, we try hard to emphasize the importance of prevention. Given escalating healthcare costs, we spend 80% of our healthcare dollar treating chronic diseases nationally. The importance of investing in prevention cannot be overstated. These are diseases that can and should be prevented. In public health, we want to prevent illness and death by going upstream with partners whenever we can. We know that prevention saves money, it saves time, and most importantly, prevention saves lives. To address the growing burden that healthcare is placing on our state budget, we must do what we can to keep people healthier for longer. This includes addressing current and emerging health threats. With that in mind, we are pleased that funding to address the health impacts of climate change has been included in your bill. I very much appreciate the investments in health equity and making sure that everyone can achieve their optimal health. We are all troubled by the Minnesota paradox. We're one of the healthiest states to live for white Minnesotans, but also have some of the worst disparities for Indigenous Minnesotans, Black Minnesotans, and other Minnesotans of color. There are tools in this bill that will help us to address some of those troubling disparities, including statutory establishment of the Health Equity Advisory and Leadership Council and funding to address the ongoing HIV epidemics in the state. We appreciate funding to continue the work of our cultural communications team so that most people around Minnesota can get critical health information in their primary language. This is currently grant funded, and like so much of our good work, I'd hate to see that work fade with the end of grant funding. This bill also allows us to delve deeper into disparities and populations most impacted by expanding the work through the Office of American Indian Health and by establishing a new Office of African American Health. And we also very much appreciate support for the Equitable Care Task Force, which I know will help our state advance bolder solutions to health inequities. As you know, we can only be successful if we have strong partners to help us deliver public health strategies to improve people's lives, their families, and their communities. We appreciate the investments in community capacity building that will help us improve our ability to work better together. As Senator Wicklund previewed this morning, we have several important and successful grant programs in the bill: Healthy Beginnings, Proposals for School Health, Community Health Workers, and the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Those are just a few of the grant programs that support our key partners to deliver important services to Minnesotans. We very much appreciate inclusion of administrative costs where you have. We need those monies. As you know, we cannot implement these programs or engage in robust, meaningful partnership without staff. We have to both retain current staff and add new staff to deliver on this very admirable budget, especially when there are grants to oversee. We want to ensure appropriate internal controls for managing all required grant activities. And speaking of maintaining staff, I very much appreciate the inclusion of the operating adjustment for the department to help us maintain our current service levels. This funding represents support of the talented and dedicated people we have, investments in our technology, and again, the oversight that we want for fiscal stewardship. Thank you, Chair Marty, and to this committee for your efforts and the investment in public health and prevention in Minnesota.
Thank you, Commissioner Cunningham. There are questions from the committee for either commissioner? If not, we really appreciate your being here. We have several other amendments I'm aware of, and I will ask if Senator Murphy would be willing to present the A47 amendment, the business subsidy, the financial review of grants that we've been putting on other bills as well. Senator Murphy will move that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move the A47 amendment. This is language that we have been discussing with every bill in the Finance Committee, and I'm sure Senator Wicklund is well aware of that since she serves on this committee. And I hope that we will add this to this important legislation.
Is there any discussion on the A47 amendment? This is the same one we've been putting on other bills as well. If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Murphy, I know you had another amendment as well.
Mr. Chair, I have, I believe, the A51 amendment. If Senator Wicklund is ready for that.
Yes. I think that's in the packet as well. Yes.
Mr. Chair and members, the A51 amendment is the result of some discussion that Senator Wicklund, Senator Morrison, and I have been having together around the Keeping the Nurses at the Bedside Act and the means by which we will evaluate the progress being made when and if this becomes law. This language, I think, is the result of much of the work by Senator Morrison. I saw it last night. And I will say, while I am moving this and support the idea that we do this evaluation, I'm concerned about the time frames here, that they might be a little ambitious, given the time that's going to take to both implement the law and to see the progress that we want to see in the law. So I didn't think that without having a conversation with Senator Morrison and a little more time with Senator Wicklund that it was right to amend it. But I do want to flag it for the committee that I think this is an important addition to this legislation, and we may need to make just some slight alterations as it moves through the process. And with that, I'd ask for your support.
Senator Wicklund on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Murphy, for offering the amendment. I think it is a good addition to the bill, and I do agree that we should have some further discussion about the timeline. I think that when it was created, it reflected perhaps, you know, some of our constraints in terms of our budget years, but I think the implementation of the bill will be over several years, and so we got to make sure that we're evaluating over the appropriate time frame. So I would like to keep working.
My one comment on the bill, the amendment, is that I believe the study groups in the hospitals and so on are supposed to start implementing any changes in October of 25. And I'm glad you have it where they're going to begin collecting baseline data a year before that, because it's kind of hard to measure any improvement if you don't know what you had beforehand. And I think when we see some of the issues they're studying, I think it says patient care, nurse job satisfaction, retention, and other outcomes. I think you need to know, I'd argue, how bad things have gotten in right now and measured afterwards. But my concern on the other end would be the day you start, the hospitals and everyone start making the changes, it takes time for that to happen, and this report ends like a year and a half after that. I don't have any suggested amendment or anything, but I hope as you look forward that you figure out if that's enough time to finish studying it. And obviously you'd have to change some of the, if you need to carry over the funding beyond 2027, we'd have to figure that out. But just when you're talking about it, I just think you're not going to have the full impact if it just a major change happens and then a year later you're basically doing your evaluation of it. So it's just a thought for as you move forward. Is there other discussion on the A51 amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. There are other amendments. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the A50 amendment. And Senator Wicklund, I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to connect with you before a committee, but I think this is a fairly simple amendment.
Senator Pratt offers the A50 amendment, which is being distributed. Senator Wicklund, or Senator Pratt, you want to speak to the amendment first and then I can get her comment on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill has an option for some managed care patients to go to transfer over to fee-for-service plans. And this would allow, or this would require state agencies to pay medical assistance and Medicare plans on fee-for-service under the same time frame that we require private insurers to do. I think this is a pretty simple amendment. I talked to Mr. Albrecht. It's anticipated it shouldn't have any any fiscal impact, and I'm hoping it can be an easy one to accept.
Senator Wicklund on the amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Pratt. I guess it seems to me that there might be some differences in the way that the department works in terms of being a payer and how health plans might work, if that's what the Section 62Q.75 has to do with. So I guess I would have some concern about this without having some discussion with the department about, you know, it sounds on the surface just do one like the other, but I don't think that they're equivalent. So I think, you know, DHS is a payer and an agency, but not not a health plan, and they might have regulations that affect the agency that perhaps are different than health plans. So I guess I would want to have more more discussion about what the impact would be to adopt something, you know, without hearing from the agency or talking to the agency.
DHS currently pays a number of claims for a lot of their patients by fee-for-service. Is there an issue that they've been paying them slowly, or do you know, Senator Pratt, or have you heard anything about that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding that there's a delay in the managed care payment beyond just the withhold, the 8% withhold, but there is a delay in the managed care, which would, if we had prompted those to be paid on a more timely basis, would have created a fiscal impact. This just simply says that just like any of our private insurers who have, you know, our large organizations as well, and complex organizations, that they have to pay or deny claims that are clean claims within 30 calendar days after the date upon which the health company or third-party administrator received the claim. And we're talking about now direct payment to small-town providers that don't have the type of reserves that our managed care providers have to be able to pay claims to provide or to pay for services to providers and then set those aside. This is going to be a claim that's going to be and cash flow that's going to hit your local physician directly, and that's why we wanted to make sure that we were on par with private insurance.
Senator Friends on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Senator Wicklund. Thanks, Senator Pratt. Senator Pratt, I'm just going to ask this question this way. I'm somewhat familiar with 62Q, and some of it has impacts on providers and provide circumstances under which providers can be denied payment. Would your amendment have any effect or change on when providers could or could not be denied payment? That's of interest to us in Greater Minnesota in particular.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that question, Senator Friends. The bill does not, well, the bill specifically references 62Q75 subdivision 2, makes no changes to the underlying law, is just a reference to state that Department of Health needs to follow the same protocol so that your providers in Greater Minnesota do get prompt payment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Friends.
Well, I'm going to step back out of the ring on that one. Parts of 62Q do provide circumstances under which some payers can deny payment to providers based on timing. That would be my concern, but I admit I can't whip out the statute book here and figure it out in the next few minutes. So I think I'm just going to support the author at this point. Thank you, Senator Pratt. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I guess I wonder, and maybe if somebody from the department, I don't need to have somebody come testify and so on, but do you know, has this been an issue of people of the department paying claims late on their fee-for-service claims?
Mr. Chair, I'm not aware of there being a concern about that. It was not brought up in terms of the bill area that Senator Pratt referenced, the managed care opt-out provision that would allow people to opt for a fee-for-service enrollment. I think before I would want to make a change like this, I would want to understand if there is substantial difference in how DHS is currently paying the fee-for-service claims in a timely manner, and what the regulations that affect them from the federal government in terms of how to provide timely payments. I would want to understand if those are similar or in alignment with what the managed care plans have in terms of requirements before altering the language and altering the conditions that they need to work under. So if there's if it's already the case that prompt payment is required and that the timeline is the same, you know, the 30 days that you mentioned, and they're doing it even could be doing it in less time, I wouldn't want to make a change to what they're required to follow or comply with at this time.
I see a note from staff that says DHS complies with federal requirements on timely payments, and approximately 98% of the claims are submitted to DHS process electronically without human intervention within 2 days. And they pay interest on claims that can't be, and apparently, and I don't know, but I think what might be helpful would be to have Senator Pratt and others and the author of the bill sit down with DHS to try and figure out what language might work if this is a problem. I mean, it doesn't sound like it's a problem, but if it might be, I think it would be wise to have you sit down with them. So your feeling right now is for the amendment, take it or not?
I would appreciate holding off on taking it right now and talking with them before we do that.
But I will encourage you and Senator Pratt and DHS to sit down on it and figure out. But Senator Pratt and then Senator Murphy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. With the promise of Senator Wicklund, and again, I'm sorry for the late conversation. But if I've got the commitment of Senator Wicklund to talk about this before it goes to the floor, I'd be happy to withdraw the amendment for now.
Okay.
Happy to do that.
Then, yes, please make sure you two of you meeting on that. Senator Murphy, on that point, or okay. That amendment is withdrawn. Other amendments? This committee's quiet today. If there are no further amendments, any further discussion on the bill? Senator Wicklund, comments on the bill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate having a chance to, you know, thoroughly have you review the financial implications of this bill through the spreadsheet and the discussion that we had over some of the amendments. And just want to repeat, I think that this is a bill that will invest in a substantial way in some key issues and key areas that our state can benefit from in terms of improving health, strengthening families, and empowering our communities, and being also thoughtful about how we can look ahead to transform our current system into an even better one in terms of addressing health care costs. So I won't spend a lot more time on remarks today, but I really appreciate your hearing the bill and look forward to having more discussions with members if you have questions.
I'll say I really appreciate your work on the CCAP and finally boosting that to a regular level so child care can be more accessible and more adequately funded, and a whole range of other things in here. Reinstating the adult dental benefit, I think, is huge. I think there are a lot of good things in the bill. It's a huge bill, but yeah. Are there further discussion from anybody else? If not, Senator Wicklund moves, and those on Zoom, please turn on your cameras if you wish to vote. Senator Wicklund moves that Senate File 2995, as amended, be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion does prevail. Senator Wicklund, do you sure you don't want another rerun through the spreadsheet? With that, thank you very much. We are meeting tomorrow morning, I believe, at 8:30. 5:30 a.m. and we have a lot of much smaller bills. We're dealing with state governments and veterans and elections and energy and environment tomorrow, I believe. And with that, with that, Senator Murphy's going to try and see if she can get her spreadsheet done faster than today's one. With that, no further business, we will adjourn until tomorrow at 8:30 a.m.